Hi, welcome back to the Personality Hacker Podcast. My name is Joel Mark Witt.
And I'm Antonia Dodge.
So one of the things that changed my life, it was in 2006, on May 3rd, 2006, my firstborn child, Gunner, came into this world. Mm-hmm. And from that day forward, I was a father. Mm-hmm. And it radically altered my existence. If you're a parent listening or watching right now, you probably remember that moment when your first child was born. And or the first child maybe you adopted or you brought a child into your life, and the first moment when you realized, oh my goodness, for the first time, I'm no longer just a child. I'm now a parent in this world. I've got a little creature that depends on me, that looks to me for guidance, leadership, protection. Like, this is a whole different level of responsibility in life than even a day ago. And it struck me. I mean, it was a joyful moment. I love my son and went on to have a second son from previous marriage. And then you and I, Antonia, have a daughter together, Piper, who's at the time of this recording, roughly around 11 or 12 years old. She's going to be turning 12 very soon. So I just want to reflect on that moment when a transition happens. Now, Antonia, you had a little bit different experience because you and I got together before our child was born together. You were a step parent to my two sons. So you have this almost grafting experience of parental energy. It wasn't like your own natural born children or adoptions. You're just a stepmom. So I think we already have a very different experience of parenting right out of the gate in how we see it, I think, from the first moment we had to step into that energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and being a step parent is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's its own topic. I've read many books.
Topics,
on,
plural.
Yeah, topics, plural. Being a step parent is, all the responsibility with none of the privilege in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's not all of the responsibility, but there's a lot that is required of a step parent.
Expected.
And depending upon how the other co-parent feels, if they're still in the picture, there might be, you know, there might be some weird dynamics happening. It's like it really, being a step parent is like threading a needle.
Yeah.
Or at least that has been my experience, is it's like threading a needle. But that said, to go back to what you, you know, started this podcast out with, which is this idea that when your child is born, it changes your life, or when a child comes into your life that you are now fully responsible for. It's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it's such a massive paradigm shift is first of all, it's archetypal, meaning that it's Carl Jung talked about archetypes as being primordial. There's something that kicks on for us when it happens. It's a different phase, almost like, you know, puberty hits and now it's like life is never going to be the same again. Like it's a different paradigm you're entering. And when you move out of your parents' house for the first time, this is a paradigm shift, right? This is like the world will never be the same. And so there are these peak moments where things radically alter. And in some ways, you kind of can't go back. Like, take, for example, if you move out of your parents' house and then you find yourself moving back in, you're not moving back into the same relationship you had before. So even if the circumstances appear the same, even if you have the same bedroom with the same stuff around you, it's not the same. And it never will be again. And having a child puts you in a different paradigmatic space.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes hard to communicate to people who have chosen not to have children, what it does. And I think the reason why it's important to, or one of the reasons why it's so interesting is not only are you now a parent, but then you get to discover what kind of parent you are, which you cannot anticipate. You can prepare yourself for the concept of it. You can tell yourself what kind of parent you're going to be and what you are and are not going to allow your child to do. You can have all these beliefs about yourself, but until that rubber hits the road, you don't actually know what kind of parent you are, because what kind of parent you are is emergent.
Yeah.
It's emergent, and it's also responding and reacting to the child themselves, to trying to reconcile your image of yourself with the reality of day-to-day life, moments in the timeline and where the culture is at and how you're responding, reacting to that. So the kind of parent we are is going to be at least somewhat, if not radically different than the kind of parent we assumed we'd be before the child was born.
Absolutely. Well, and that moment when your child is born or you bring the child into your life, the starting point of being a parent, like, it was a paradigm shift. And I realized I had responsibility, but I had no skill built in any of that. Like when my firstborn son Gunner was born, it's not like I knew how to like manage a teenager in my life, right? Like help raise a teenager. Like this creature just came into my life as a small baby that cries and just has all these needs. I don't even know how to deal with that, let alone everything else that's going to come down the road. And in fact, parenting for me has been a learn on the job kind of experience. And Gunner, as my firstborn, has broken the seal for that at every moment, right? At the time of this recording, he's almost 2 decades in. He's around 18 years old, a totally different phase of life than when he first was born, you know, 18 years ago. And I've had to continually update how I am a parent as circumstances and life conditions and things progress. Like it's been both, like, I guess what I would say is, and you probably have a very similar experience, Antonia, like kind of when you start to develop a skill, like I got a handle on this. Now I know what I'm doing. The kid changes. They grow up and they're different now. And you're like, oh no, I got to learn a whole new set of things.
Yeah.
The reason why we're talking about this is we like to look at parenting as an analogy for what we really need to do with our own selves in our personality types, in that we also need to look at ourselves in a self-parenting framework. And our belief, Antonia, is that if we approach personality development in our lives from this framework, okay, what would I need if I was parenting myself? It unlocks a lot of avenues for growth. But just like raising a child, you are growing and changing. And so it's never going to be finished. It's never something that's over with. It's something that you will learn on the job as you, quote unquote, raise yourself or self-parent through things in life. And I think there's a lot of crossover analogy. And I would also say that there's something in here around maturity as well. When I became a parent, I didn't have the luxury of being immature in a lot of different areas. Now, I was still immature, but there was a clock ticking that was going to be a very short time I could stay immature in certain things, because now I've got this small, completely dependent creature and I got to grow up fast. And so that's been also part of my journey over the last 18 years with 3 children now. It's been a lot of maturation for me.
I think no matter how sincere one is in being the best possible parent they can be, because it is a learn on the job experience, you're always going to, in some ways, not serve your child. In some ways, like there's going to be something you miss. Now, fortunately, children are resilient and we have a tendency to sort of figure things out, but, you know, over time, but a lot of moving into adulthood and maturing and becoming, you know, sort of becoming fit for life is filling in the gaps of what wasn't caught the first time around. Like when you were being parented by somebody, they were bringing all their baggage in. They were bringing all of their stuff in. They were bringing all the things that they had not been maturely parented around themselves.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with, like I mentioned before, regardless of what kind of parent they said that they were going to be, like my parents, I think, had very strong ideas about what kind of parents they were, whether or not they actually succeeded at it.
Yeah.
Right. And so there were many things that they did well and right. And there were quite a few things that they didn't, right? Like they were not sufficient parents for me in certain ways. And so at a certain point, I realized I had to stop seeking parental energy from them. I had to stop looking to them to be my parents for me. And fill the role. And so what is the role of a parent? Well, we'll talk about what kinds of roles parents fill in just a moment. But when you get an idea of what it is that you're supposed to be doing as a parent for your children, or how we have an expectation of how we're going to be parented, when some of those roles are no longer, that you didn't get a sufficient experience, or it doesn't feel like you did, at a certain point, you have to stop seeking your parents to continue to fill those roles for you. And you've got to take the mantle. Like you've got to take over and start self-parenting, like doing that work on your own.
Yeah.
And so this idea of what does it mean to inner parent? What does it mean to take on the responsibility from your parents? I think there's many different layers here. The first one is, What does it mean to stop seeking that energy from outside of yourself? What does that mean first? The second is, what are our resistances and why are we reluctant to do that? The first one is like, what does it mean? And the second is, what is going to cause any sort of obstruction to it? And the third piece, I think, is what kind of parent am I? how am I going to self-parent myself? Once I've figured out how to do it and the things that are keeping me or making me feel reluctant to do so, how am I going to show up for myself in this way? Especially in a way that maybe my parents didn't show up for me, or just areas that, you know, intentional or not intentional, like your parents didn't necessarily intend to not show up for you. They were just dealing with whatever they were dealing with. They had their own demons. So how am I going to show up for myself?
Yeah.
And what are some ways to see this subject in general? And then to then merge it in with personality and personality theory, how can an understanding of my personality type help facilitate this?
Yeah.
How can it make it a little easier to figure out the best way to parent myself, considering that one of the challenges in parenting is that every child is different. They all have their unique personalities and their personality types, and they need different things.
Yeah.
Most of us did not have parents that were into personality theory, so they didn't know how to handle us. They just treated us the way that they maybe wanted to have been treated themselves, or overvaluing their own experience. So how does an understanding and awareness of type help us kind of finish off the process, or take over from our parents and do it in a more bespoke fashion the way we need it to be done?
And Tony, you introduced a concept on the podcast multiple times, and you have this really interesting distinction. You say, you know, there's two styles of parents, you often say. There's the protection parenting, you know, always going out and running to make sure a child doesn't hurt themselves, don't run into traffic, let's protect, protect, protect. And then there's a second style of parenting, which is preparation parenting, right? It's about almost training and guiding a child to be prepared for life, because the protection from a parent will be removed. And so we've talked about that. And I think usually when you talk about it, Antonio, you're applying it toward, you know, not an infant. Like you're not talking about a toddler who needs preparation parenting. Obviously a toddler would need protection parenting. So I want to take the concept that you brought, and I want to add a third element to it and kind of talk about it in three different phases of a child's life. So this is just opinion. This is just us kind of how we see it. There might be some more fidelity or nuance you could go down into with this, but this is basically how we've talked about it. And we could use that protection and preparation. And I'll add a third word, promote.
Yeah. Well, I think you're saying that we're not child psychologist professionals.
Sure.
So we're not talking about like a deeper theory, but at the same time, this has been a model that's been very helpful for us in our parenting.
Absolutely. So when a child is young, usually under the age of 12, before puberty, they need a lot of protection parenting. Don't run in traffic. Don't, you know, you always make the joke. It's like children are like little suicide machines. They're trying to kill themselves, not on purpose, but they just are trying a lot of things, right? Don't step off that ledge. Don't stick your fork in the light socket or the plug or whatever. Like there's all these things we try to protect children from hurting themselves or others just because they're young. They don't know what they don't know yet. And they need a lot of protection at that age. They're very vulnerable. They're gullible. They can believe what anybody tells them.
They're clumsy.
So we're protecting them both physically, but also mentally and emotionally and psychologically. Like we're really trying to protect them as much as we can. We don't let them watch certain content, scary movies, you know, certain inappropriate content for their age. We're protecting their mind, their heart, and their bodies. And now you transition after puberty into maybe more of the teenage years, up into maybe your 18 to 20 range. And really, this is all about preparation. No longer does a child necessarily need to be protected all the time. Might have already gone through puberty, but they're trying to understand, okay, what is the world going to be bringing to me? How can I be prepared? How do I do basic things like cook for myself or clean or do laundry or, you know,
understand money
or work on a project or associate with the, you know, somebody I'm attracted to romantically or a friend group, somebody hurt me, like all the different other levels that you're going to deal with the rest of your life. We help prepare children in their teenage years typically. And then I think the next step is promotion. I think when a child goes away to college, I think parents enter into, it's more of a coaching role. It's more for advice and support and promote the child into the next phase of life. Almost like try to find them opportunities, try to help them, you know, get that scholarship for college or get the first job or create the resume. You're helping them promote themselves into this new world and reality they're entering as an adult. And hopefully that they can be an adult, not just adulting as a verb, but step into the role and the feeling that I am an adult in this world.
Yeah. And these aren't clean lines.
No. Every kid's gonna be different.
not just every kid's going to be different, but there's going to be a little bleed over in all of it. When they're young, you're also preparing them.
Yeah.
And when they're older, there's still ways to protect them. But the emphasis changes.
Yes.
When they're young, the emphasis is on protection.
Yes.
And when they're older, the emphasis is on preparation. So there's still some crossover here, but the prime directive has changed a little bit. And so so it's not a matter of, you know, at a certain age, you stop protecting them, but at a certain age, you stop focusing on protecting them.
Yes.
And you start focusing on preparing them. And I think that's important. I think it's important to understand that if they're really little and your focus is on preparation and skill development, they might not have the sophistication to be able to live up to your expectations. Like, they might need more emotional, psychological, or physical protection.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to prepare them too early, that might just be a weight on them. It might kind of crush their little spirit because you're so insistent that they build skill when they're kind of too young. They just, they kind of need to be held a little bit and maybe, you know, maybe nurtured more. But when they get older, if you don't flip those focuses, if you don't go to preparation, you're still protecting and coddling them. Well, then now they're not going to be prepared for the world at all. They'll enter the world expecting people to take care of them all the time.
Yeah.
And the world won't. And then they'll be shocked and surprised and feel entitled to something that they're really not entitled to. So the focus needs to shift, even if there's still bleed over in some of these areas.
In our Personality Life Path Mentorship Program, we look at all of the 8 Jungian cognitive functions of personality. So your personality type, the 4 letters you look at, if you're listening or watching, you know that those 4 letters point to what are called cognitive functions. These are the ways that we perceive our world or learn information or make judgments or decisions based on the things that we perceive. And so when we think about a person's personality and all the parts of who they are, you could, in our PLP, we do this. We actually look at all 8 parts of a person and the energies they're attuned to from their personality.
PLP standing for Personality Life Path. It's a program that we run a couple times a year.
That's right. And so when we think about self-parenting, the reason why I brought up the framework of protect, prepare, promote, is we could ask ourselves, in a general sense, we could say, okay, what do I need? If I'm going to self-parent, am I in a protection time period? Am I in a preparation time period? Do I need to self-parent myself, prepare myself for what's coming next? Or am I in a promotion time period? Am I trying to promote myself more? Almost as if I was parenting a child. And then I think the reason I added in the PLP or Personal Life Path Mentorship idea is because we know it's not just one thing. There's all these different parts of ourselves, both the ego syntonic elements of who we are, the parts we can see that are more available to our ego to identify with, whether they're strong or more weak or uncertain parts, we still identify with them. But then there's also parts of us that are more in the shadow. They're ego dystonic parts of ourselves. They're parts that our ego necessarily doesn't really see. In fact, sometimes gets triggered when this material comes to us from other people. We think that's not me. And we reject it by getting triggered or offended or however we are, sad, hurt, anxious, whatever we interpret that message to be. We're pushing away parts of ourselves when we're in that space. So when we say, what do you need? Do you need preparation, protection, promotion, like out of those 3 categories? Well, it depends. Some parts of you in your cognition and your personality might need protection. Maybe the more small, uncertain parts. Some parts of you might need preparation and some parts of you might need promotion. So this is a complex system that's running that makes up who you are. And that's what we do in the, you know, Personal Life Path. We spend 1 week on each one of these functions and your relationship to it, both in your personality and in the world at large and in other people that represent it. And then that creates a systems map to be able to look at almost from a self-parent. We don't really frame it as self-parenting, but essentially that's what we're doing in that program. We're helping people go, what part of me needs this proper parenting? How do I tune what I know about myself to help guide myself? And so I think that when we say that, there's so much more fidelity. So we could take it just at the top. What do you generally need? Your whole personality, protection, preparation, or promotion? Or what parts of you need those elements? I think that's a good place to start, you know, asking whether you just want to start at the surface or go much deeper.
I had more ground I wanted to cover before we hit personality type theory.
Yeah.
So should I go back to those other things and establish some other, okay.
I didn't know you had a lot of research. This is good.
No. I had established how to do it, what keeps us from doing it, what kind of parent we are, and then how does type help?
Fair enough.
So we talked about what kind of parent in the protect, prepare, and promote. So we kind of covered a little bit of that ground.
Yeah.
But before we go into the type theory of it, is it okay if I...
Yeah, please. I want to do more establishing. Make sure if somebody's watching or listening, they know what's going on.
I want to lay a couple tracks. Because
I like that.
Because what you're talking about, I think, is such a critical and crucial element of how type can help us. I actually think we're dipping our toe into some of the ways that type can become not just a powerful psychological tool for us, but also a spiritual tool.
Yeah.
I think we're dipping into that territory, or yes, at least the way that I see it. So I want to lay some tracks,
yeah,
to make sure that when we get to the part that you're talking about, that, you know, like, what, how do we make sure that we're honoring all the parts of ourselves, that we have established why it's important and what about us fights against it? Or like, why would we not do this work? So how to do self-parenting is, in my opinion, it's the first awareness that it's necessary, and then the willingness to take over the job that your parents stopped at a certain point.
Yeah.
When we have an eternal child part of us, which we all of us have what's called a pure eternus inside of us, this eternal child energy that pops up. And in type theory, it's associated with a specific cognitive function, but I don't think it even needs to be in order to understand it. There's an eternal child part of us that gets really upset when life is unfair, when things don't go our way, when we feel like other people are taking advantage, or they're not seeing our contributions, or they're not acknowledging or giving us sufficient amounts of approval. When we want to be taken care of and nurtured, when we want other people to be responsible for us, everybody has an eternal child part of themselves that's the wish. The wish is that, yeah, we are being, somebody else will be the adult and we can be the kid. Now, even if we're in a time period where as adults we are, you know, that we're self-directed, we have our own job, we take care of our own bills, we live on our own, we've, you know, like, we're doing a bunch of things that the contemporary world would call adulting, right? We are acting and living as an adult. It doesn't mean that there's not a part of us that wishes somebody would take this all off our shoulders,
yeah,
that somebody else would actually be responsible for us. Now, if we're unaware that this is an energy that is important for us to keep as an energy, but to know its place,
yeah,
meaning that the eternal child energy that's inside of every human being is a beautiful thing because it also taps us into play. It taps us into vulnerability. It taps us into all these beautiful childlike qualities that we don't actually want to lose as we get older. And the more disassociated people are from their eternal child, it's almost like the less joy they have, right? Like there's a joie de vivre that comes through that energy. So we don't actually want to separate ourselves from it or disown this archetype that lives in all humans. We don't want to get rid of it. But we also don't want it to become the dominant energy or the dominant archetype that's setting the tone for how we're interacting with the world. It doesn't set us up for life. If our eternal child energy is always looking for somebody to take care of it and thinks the world is unfair if it's not being taken care of, then it will create a lot of interpersonal problems. It'll create a lot of suffering because we're always looking for somebody to be our mom or dad. And we're not always aware that that's what's going on. We interpret it as everybody's really unfair, or my boss is really unfair, or why do I have to do this job? Or why do I have to, you know, like it's just this general sense that the world is out to get us because it's requiring us to step up and be responsible.
Yeah.
And every act of adult responsibility to the eternal child feels like an ask that's too much, because it is for that part of who we are. It really is. It's outside of that archetype's province to be able to fulfill. So if this is the predominant archetype that we're carrying from situation to situation, life will always feel unfair. It's why it's easy to become a martyr or take on a victim complex, because it's like, because to a child, it is unfair and rightly so. So there are other archetypal energies inside of us that can take the mantle. But the first thing we have to understand is there is a part of 100% of people who feel this way. So the problem isn't feeling that way. The problem is allowing it to be the predominant archetype.
Yeah.
So the how does one take on self-parenting? They do it by recognizing that there's also a parental energy that lives inside of us at the same time as an eternal child.
Yeah.
That just like there's an eternal child part that wants everybody else to take responsibility for us or somebody to take responsibility for us, there's an equal, if not stronger, opportunity to step into a parental archetype energy, which also 100% of people have. So there is a part of us that's actually rearing to go to self-parent. There's a part of us that's ready and willing and able to take on the mantle of being a responsible adult.
Yeah.
But I think part of doing that is understanding what it means to be a parent to begin with. So I've been thinking about this concept of what it means to be parental because I was reading a book called Goddesses and Older Women. So if you've been with the podcast for a while, you know that it's going to have been like 5 or 6 years now. We did a series called Goddesses in Every Woman and Goddesses in Every Man. I think it was like a 6-part podcast series.
Yeah.
And it's based on 2 different books written by Jungian analyst Jean Shanita Bolin, who uses the pantheon of Greek goddesses and gods to talk about archetypal energies that live in all women and live in all men. And to try to figure out which archetypal energy you must align with, because it helps us figure out our personality a little bit more. It helps us figure out like what kind of woman do I see myself as and what kind of energies am I missing in my life? So she also wrote a book called Goddesses and Older Women. And it's the same theme, but carried on for women over the age of 50 who are moving into what's called a crone phase, which is another archetype. So as mentioned before, archetypes are basically primordial. They're energies that live in what Jung calls the collective unconscious, which is like it's basically they're things that we intuitively and instinctively know, even if it's not been explained to us.
Yeah.
So the easiest way to understand an archetype is to see a picture of a mother and child. Nobody needs to describe what's going on in that painting or picture. And you don't need to from the earliest, like even if you're prelingual, nobody needs to explain to you what's going on there. You just instinctively, intuitively know. So that's what an archetype is. An archetype is when you see an image of it, you just instinctively know what that thing is. You don't have to have it explained. And there is no complete list of archetypes. There's as many archetypes as you can possibly imagine. So what does it mean to be a parental archetype? What doesn't need to be explained, but could be put into language to understand what it means to take this on for ourselves? So I've been thinking about what it means to be a parent and what is the actual, like what's the center of that archetypal energy? And I've put it down to this. It's when you take on a task that goes on for a long time, puts you in a position of responsibility where the buck stops with you, that you can't say no to, that you must continue to show up for, and feels bigger than your ability to do, but not to a crushing amount. So the parental energy is when you take on a responsibility that fits those criteria. And in the book, Goddesses in Every Woman, she talks about the triune goddess or the Trinity goddess. You'll see pictures and images and statues of the triune goddess, which is the three phases of what it means to be a woman, the maiden, the mother, and the crone. So the maiden time period is when you're young, obviously. The moon is waxing, right? It's like all, life is filled with opportunities and possibilities, but you're not particularly good at solving your own problems. And that's the thing about being a maiden, is that maidens are, the nice thing is that life is ahead of you and it's a bright future. And the bad thing is that it's much easier. You're very vulnerable and it's easy for you to make the wrong decisions. During the matron time period, this is the archetypal time period in a woman's life when she becomes a mother. Now, not every woman can be a mother. Not every woman can have children. And not every woman chooses to have children. But every woman needs to go through a matron time period. And so when I was trying to define what it means to be a mother, to go through a matron time period, if, say, you can't have children or you choose not to, you can still go through a matron time period by taking on a responsibility that fits that criteria where you can't say no to it, right? Yeah. Like this is just happening. This is a responsibility you have to step up to and you can't just abandon it. it's something that's going to take a while, right? Raising a child takes no less than, you know, well, I mean, basically they have to, in times past, be about 9 or 10 before they can at all be independent in any way whatsoever. But mothers naturally want to, you know, be with their children for as long as it takes to make sure that they're going to be okay, whether that's, you know, like 18 years or whatever. So it's going to, it's a commitment. So it's a large responsibility that you cannot say no to. It is a commitment of so much time. It feels bigger than your ability to deal with, but it isn't. So it requires you to step out of your comfort zone. It requires you to build different skills. It requires you to be responsive and to be humble and to show up for this thing with a sense of responsibility. And it is a creative work. That's the one thing I didn't mention. It's also it's a reflection of who you are. It's creative. It came from you. And you're going to use it to some extent to present your ego to the world. So work can be like this too. A woman can take on some other project that meets all of this criteria and also have a matron time period, even if she's not technically a mother. And Boleyn talks about how you have to go through the matron time period in order to have a sufficiently wise crone time period. You can't skip steps. You can't go from maiden to crone. You have to have this time period of responsibility. So I say all of that to say the concept of self-parenting means that you're going to take the mantle for no longer expecting other people to have that relationship to you, right? Like there's nobody out there that's going to take on you as a project. There's nobody that's going to make it so that you're going to be okay. At a certain point, you must take this on yourself. And when you have a child, sometimes that happens, you know, like you realize all the things that your parents lacked in their training of you. And now you have to basically be doing this inner work, the self-parenting work while you're raising your own child in order to show up for your child as much as you can or whatever project you take on. But you have to go through this time period of responsibility of taking on the mantle in order to have wisdom, in order to gain wisdom at the end. And that's the concept for women. But I would say the concept runs for men too, to commit, to have a project that feels too big, but isn't, that you're going to show up for. You're going to build new skills in order to, you know, to do it well. And it's going to be a reflection of yourself. Like you've got a stake in the game, right? Like this is a part of who you are. And so you don't want to abandon it. So self-parenting means recognizing what it means to be a parent, to have these qualities and characteristics, and to say, I'm going to now stop looking to somebody else to do that for me, and I'm going to start doing that for myself. I'm going to take myself on as a project. I'm going to be committed to it. It's going to feel more than I can handle, but it's not going to be. I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm going to have a stake in the game. I'm going to see who I become or am becoming as a reflection of myself. And what better could, you know, what is more is a reflection of yourself than the personality that you assert to the world, how you present yourself to, you know, to everybody else. And so as opposed to going like, well, this is just emerging and this is just quote unquote who I am, I'm going to take on the project of becoming, just like I would take on the project of my child becoming and going through these different phases. So I just want to lay the tracks of what we're really talking about when we talk about inner parenting. And it means saying yes to all of that and then recognizing our resistances against it, which are things like, but I don't want to, right? Like, well, why is the world so unfair that I have to do all of this extra work? And the resistance is primarily going to be the inner child part of us, that pure eternus, that eternal part of us that wants to be taken care of. That's the part that's going to, it's going to try to battle the parental element. Just like in a family, sometimes children battle their parents. But in those dynamics, a child who wins over their parents in a power struggle is not a happy child. In fact, it's a miserable child. And it's the same way inside of ourselves. If we allow our eternal child energy to take over, to have the biggest voice, to, you know, be the one that's setting the agenda, everything inside of us will be unhappy because that's not the dynamic. That's not the natural order of things. A child does not feel like they're equipped to navigate through this world. That's why they always feel anxious and they're always looking for somebody to help. So if we allow that part of ourselves to take over and get martyry or victim-y or continue to look for somebody to save us from ourselves, we're not going to be happy people. That's not fulfilling. But if our parental energy does take over and we start becoming responsible for ourselves in whatever way possible, then even our eternal child part of ourselves that might have originally balked will rest into it. And there's a stillness that comes along, just like there's a stillness in a child that has a good parent that knows that it's looking out for its best interests.
Yeah.
There's a stillness inside of us when we take that on for ourselves.
So we're doing a lot of laying the ground here. I think we're going to need to split this into two parts.
Okay.
If we want to go deeper into personality, because I think this is good conversation to lay the tracks down. I think so what comes up for me, so I appreciate that. So we've talked about, you know, protection, preparation, promotion. We've talked about the eight cognitive functions. And so as we talk about self-parenting, I had the idea that it's not just your personality type. There's all these different parts of you that need different types of parenting. Then you introduce the idea of what is parenting at all, going through the framework archetypically from the perspective of the matron, the mother. What does it mean to be a parent? And you had some of these qualities, you know, a commitment you can't get out of, creativity, it's bigger than you. You may feel like you don't have this, but you probably do if you just step up and you grow into it. It's also an ego,
you reflection. Know,
reflection of your own mm-hmm. ego. And I think that definitely is there. So the final idea I'll put into here, I think for this episode, and then we can make some comments. And then I think we look toward the next one to unpack this, how this applies to types specifically, or at least a pattern we can use.
Yeah.
The idea I want to have is where, like if you're listening or watching right now, this is the thought exercise I would have is where am I outsourcing this already? Right. Okay. So there maybe the place I would work, like my job is a place you can obviously outsource parenting. They handle, you know, my resource and my finances. Maybe that's like where I'm outsourcing my able to derive resource for myself. Maybe my own parents, you know, I'm too much still in deference to them, like my real parents, your real parents listening or watching right now, like you're still not really growing up. Maybe you actually live with your parents. I mean, you and I, we had a move last year, Antonia, and even at my age of life, we spent 3 months in my parents' house. We had to go there kind of in a temporary setting for just a few months. That was an interesting experience, and seeing how I still have some relationship where I still outsource some of this to them. And that was apparent to me, a pun intended, I suppose, in that environment. So where are you outsourcing maybe to your current parents, maybe a partner? Like, I think there's been times, Antonia, parts of my emotions or thoughts I've outsourced to you and expected you to do the heavy lift on that, maybe vice versa.
Oh, same, totally.
Yeah, I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I've tried to get you to parent me lots of ways.
And even my own children. It's like, where do you want to go to dinner tonight, little Johnny? It's like, what the heck is wrong with me? Like, I'm the parent. Why am I asking the kid what we're doing? Like, that's insane. That's way out of whack. So I think that we can, if you can already take a moment, a quick snapshot or an audit of where you're already, and there may be something I didn't mention or, you know, yet, maybe it's a philosophy, maybe it's a social cause, maybe it's you're looking to something outside of yourself to give you marching orders, instructions, a sense of support, like all those things, you're not doing it for yourself.
Well, and I think you can see this general attitude when people want groups of people to be parented by, say, the government.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I want the government to tell this group of people that what they're doing is not sufficient.
Oh yeah.
There's this sense of being parented by the powers that be. And by the way, I'm not picking on any, I mean, I can say that very generally because it happens in all factions all over the place. It's not there's no single group of people that are particularly like guilty of doing this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that want the government to come in and parent
forces
that they think are not, you know, that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's almost like teacher, come put the student in their place.
I saw a really dumb politician on Bill Maher's show. I mean, this person's dumb as a box of hammers. They're like, my child is on social media too much. So we need to pass a government law that makes it so that they can outlaw their ability to get on social media so I can help parent my child. And I remember Bill Maher looked at the person. He's like, well, just tell them no, take the phone. And they're like, what? You can't do that. And like all these excuses. And I'm thinking, Bill Maher's right. Like, what?
Yeah.
This person is like acting as if they have no agency in life. Well, they have no ability to say no to their child, and that it has to have a law passed in Congress or something for them to be able to parent. Like what kind of a stupid person is this? Like, how dumb are you? How do you not know how like reality works? Anyway, That's, I think, what you're talking about. Yeah. Like that kind of a, like, let's make a law so I can tell my kid no.
Right.
Really? Like, really? That's like not, that's not at all what we're talking about. You have to be a parent regardless of what the laws are. You have to, this is your child. This is, do you care about your child? Do you love them? Do you want to see them do better? You're going to wait until a law is passed outside of your household to make that decision or to make that choice?
Well, that's outsourcing parenting in general. That's hoping somebody else will parent your kids for you.
Yeah. It's just like, it's so stupid. So that's the kind of thing you're speaking to, is that something outside of you is going to do the work for you.
Yep.
And just like that person was trying to do it with their own child, we do that with ourselves. We're hoping, I do this all the time. I hope someone will save me when I'm in a certain situation.
Yep.
And not just in my eternal child part of me. Like there's hopes that I'll be saved in a lot of ways. There's a very immature part of me that wishes it was different, wishes I didn't have to do hard things, wishes I didn't have to not have parents that can just do it for me and take care of me and all of this. I mean, there's a part of me, even at my age.
Oh, yeah.
We all have this.
There's totally a part of me that hopes I don't have to face all the consequences of my previous actions.
Yeah.
Like somebody will save me from myself and go, you know, like, well, hopefully you learned enough of the lesson and we'll just smooth over the rest of it. And it's like when you become an adult, it's like, no, you got to learn the whole lesson and nobody's there to smooth it over for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's really key too. So if you ask yourself, you're listening or watching right now, where am I already hoping this energy will come and protect me or solve my problems for me?
Yeah.
And then I think the next piece is, where am I parenting others because I'm not parenting myself? That's the other thing, is this energy. I remember being like 13. I was doing something with I was trying to help my brother, teach him something or guide him in some way. And my mom grabbed me. She's like, Joel, grab my arm, turn me toward her. And she's like, someday you're going to be a great father, but you're not a father now. Cut this out. And basically she was speaking to the parental archetypical energy that was in me, even at like a 12 or 13 year old. There was, because all of us have this, and you know, even kids can display some of this parental energy. So in there, I was improperly trying to parent my brother when I'm not that much older than him, but it was good intended. It was well intended. And so there's good intention parenting that we're doing right now. You are too, watching or listening. You're tuning into a part of yourself and you're bringing a part of yourself forward to help other people. And you're parenting them, and it's like, you just take that energy and turn it toward yourself, you're going to see a lot of different results in your own life. But for some reason, we don't do that often in our personalities. And I think in the next episode, we can go into more specifics of what that would mechanistically or tangibly look like.
Yeah, you're totally right. Even a person who's maybe eternal child part of themselves is at the forefront and doing a lot of asserting, hoping somebody will come, you know, parent them. There's still that parental energy that will pop up when they're trying to help another person. And I think that's a really good opportunity to see, even if you don't have children of your own, what kind of parent you tend to lean towards.
Yeah.
So are you the kind of person who, because in that model you used before, you know, protection, preparation, and promotion, we tend to lean towards one. Like that's more our style. And so like I'm a preparation parent. I'm always trying to get the kids to learn new skills. I'm always trying to prepare them for life. Even, I mean, the reason why I said what I said earlier, which is like, don't try to prepare them too young. You might crush their little spirit, is because that's part of, I think, a mistake I made, a learning parent mistake, which is, and I try to do that as opposed to going like, no, I messed up my kid. I'm like, no, I hope I didn't mess up my kid. I was just learning to be a better parent. And so what I did is I allowed Piper to be in situations that maybe she wasn't quite ready for, because I was like, no, this will give her grit. This will prepare her for life. And she was maybe a little too young for some of those lessons. And I had to realize, no, she's still in protection right now. Like she needs my protection more than she needs to build skill at this point. But now we're, you know, she's entering, she's a preteen and she's about to enter the teenage years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is my time to shine because this is more about preparation. So this is where I would show up, more naturally as a parent. And I think there are other parents who go the opposite direction, that they're fabulous during the protection time period, but when it comes to preparation, they're still trying to protect and they're not as in tuned to the idea of preparation and skill development and preparing them to no longer need you. So that said, if you have a child of your own, you can usually tell where you favor, right? What kind of, or a promotion parent. I mean, there are people who are trying to promote their kids when they're like 7 or 8 years old, right?
Yeah.
And like, and show them to the world and show them off and like, and set them up in that way. And it's like, well, they're like 8. They just picked up the violin. Like, calm down, right? Like, don't try to get them into Harvard yet.
Yeah.
They're just 8 years old. So there's some of that too. But if you don't have children, when people come to solicit your advice, or when people you love, or maybe even strangers are, you know, maybe having a difficult time and could use a little help. What do you tend to, how do you tend to show up?
Yes.
When you are counseling or mentoring, do you tend to be more protective and give them advice on keeping them safe? Do you tend to give advice on handling the problem and building some skill, or preparing them to, you know, to get to the other side of the difficulty? Or do you tend to recommend that they promote themselves, or, you know, say, well, you just need to have bigger dreams or go bigger? So, watching what kind of parenting style you have when you're giving advice to other people, quote unquote, parenting them, will give you an idea of how you tend to self-parent, right? Like the kinds of the trend of how you treat yourself when you go inside, because we're going to need all of this in equal parts. You're going to need to be just as protective of yourself, make sure you're not being exploited, right? As you will to, you're going to need as much of a preparation energy, which is like, maybe you need to be harder on yourself and build some skill. And you're also going to need a promotion relationship with yourself, which is get out there and look for opportunities and, you know, put yourself in positions of, you know, where you can shine. So you're going to need all of this when you're doing self-parenting, but first figure out what your bias is. Yeah. So you can account for that when you go inside.
Okay. So you listening and watching right now, one of the ways to prepare for the second part of this, I think the two questions I would be asking, I mean, there's a lot of things you could tune to that we talked about. But I think the two questions are, where are you already outsourcing your parenting? Like, are you still looking to your real parents? You know, no matter how old you are, I think all of us still have a little bit of outsourcing there. Is it an institution? Is it a cause? Is it your partner? Is it your own children, friends? Like, where are you trying to get other people to parent you?
Is it God?
God, maybe. Right? Yeah. Or some kind of paradigm.
And there's a lot of paradigms out there that encourage that we seek God in a parental role, which I don't think is inappropriate. I mean, I don't want to go against a person's belief structure. I don't think it's inappropriate. I just think it gets inappropriate when you expect God to save you from yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like in a childlike way, which is save me from the consequences of my own actions.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I would also say, just because you're a child of God, and this is my own personal view, just like I'm a child of my parents, but now I'm an adult with my own children. Mm-hmm. So yes, I'm still their child, but I have a different relationship because I have matured. So I don't think just because you're a child of God doesn't mean there's no maturation and you'd stay a tiny little toddler of God.
Right.
I mean, so even in that paradigm, I mean, there's maturation and there's more responsibility you can take, even with a strong faith background. That'd be my personal viewpoint and opinion.
Yep.
And in fact, there's scriptures or texts to even point to that. The second question I would ask is, where are you already parenting others? Or where do you see the energy, the natural proclivity coming from yourself, attuning to others and trying to offer help and support and guidance, right? And I think those two questions, so where am I outsourcing and expecting to be saved or expecting to be parented still, wherever? And then where am I showing up with parental energy? And where does it typically go? How does it look? What's the qualitative nature? If you have answered both these questions, like next week on the next show, as we go into the personality type, you're going to get a lot of use out of that because you're going to have a sense of, okay, I think this is where I'm outsourcing and this is where I show up with that energy. We're going to go through just a real basic, simple framework. We're not going to go too deep into it on the next episode, but we're just going to look at the 8 cognitive functions and give some application to this using the CAR model of personality. So the other thing I'd recommend, those two questions, but the other final thing I'd recommend is before next episode, make sure you have your CAR model in front of you of your personality type. I think the best thing to do is to go over and get the owner's manual for your personality type at Personality Hacker. It's a mini course that has all the different parts of your personality and some of the elements of self-parenting in there and getting in a flow state, getting yourself out of a grip or a loop, all the different things that can happen with your personality. It gets you set up in a positive way. So I would recommend go get one of those owner's manuals and then get the CAR model for your personality out of the owner's manual. Talk about your driver, co-pilot, 10-year-old, 3-year-old. We're going to tune to that CAR model in a general way on the next episode. And this will be a very useful, I think, conversation for you going forward. Mm-hmm. Any other last minute comments, Antoni, before we wrap up this show?
No, I think we laid the tracks pretty well of what we mean when we say self-parenting. What we'll do is we'll match this up to personality theory in part two, but you still can use your personality in general, even if you don't have the specific map that we're going to talk about next week. you can still do some of this introspection. You can still kind of ask yourself like the questions that you mentioned, Joel, some of the questions that we posited before. What kind of parenting style do you tend to show up with?
Yeah.
And how are you doing it now? Like, where do you fit? Do you tend to align more with those sort of responsible parent archetypal energy? Or do you tend to have that eternal child energy more at the forefront, hoping others will parent you? So just giving some of that, some food for thought for the week before we have the rubber hit the road with type.
Yeah. So come over to personhacker.com, answer those two questions below this episode. We'd love to hear from you. What's coming up? Do you outsource parenting, or do you find yourself showing up with parental energy? And what qualitatively, or what does that energy look like, I should say? Like, what does it look like when you do that? Come over and make a comment, make your voice heard under this episode.
Yeah. And if you enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on various platforms. I think that it's not called iTunes anymore. It's called Apple Podcasts, right? I don't even remember.
Where have
anymore.
You been the last 10 years?
I know. Like, every time I have to update my little spiel at the end, I get so confused and I'm like, can't I just autopilot this? There's a ton of different places where you can subscribe to our podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, I highly recommend doing so. And yeah. You might also be watching us on YouTube on our video podcast. And if you like that, or if you like this episode, you can like, subscribe, and then hit the bell for future episodes. And as Joel mentioned, you can get your hands on what we call a personality development owner's manual. There's one that's made for your best fit type.
Yeah.
If you are uncertain what your best fit type is, you can head to our website and take the assessment, the personality test. It's not very long. And you can get an idea of your best fit type and then pick up one of those owner's manuals to do a deep dive into what all of this means and how to use your type to not just understand yourself more, but to operate life better, to make different decisions, to be aware of the options you have to create a more ergonomic experience, right? Because we don't serve our personality type. Our personality type serves us.
Yeah.
And understanding what our type preferences are means that we can start changing our life to match it. Maybe not everything, maybe not every tiny little detail, but we can change whatever can be changed to have a better experience in life, to be more ergonomically designed for who we are. So grab an owner's manual so you can start making those changes and have a better time of it in life.
Yeah. My name is Joel Markowitz.
And I'm Antonia Dodge.
And we'll talk with you on the next Personality Hacker Podcast.